the constraints. And so we have the energy density constraint. Which was that the projection of the Ricci scalar computed from the projection of the Riemann space-time curvature on the hypersurface plus the square of the trace of the extensive curvature minus this scalar is 16 pi 0. And this is also, this also leads to the Hamiltonian constraint in what is called the ADM formulation of GR, which we are not, we are very close to it, but we are not doing it because that will take into a completely different direction this course. And then we had a momentum constraint, which is dj kij minus dik is 8 pi g ji. So I want to be just make you cautious with the notation. If I use ijs, I refer to things on the hypersurface. But even here, for example, I'm not using ij, but it is obvious that k alpha beta has only kij as its elements. So we'll not worry about that. So now we want to derive the dynamical equations, which is slightly longer. So I think I should actually give you the result. And the result is what we want to derive is equation 15 of Bardeen's paper. Okay? And actually it will turn out that there is a typo in this equation, a typo or a sign error, like, because it is also there in 1980 paper of Bardeen. So I want that you guys should be very careful in following the derivation. Most probably I have made a mistake, but I have not been able to fix a couple of signs of Bardeen. Fortunately, what happens is that these signs don't matter for us. Like, eventually the final equations which we obtain, or what Bardeen obtains, are independent of these sign problems. That is very fortunate. Otherwise, we would have been completely lost. So that also I'll show you how it happens. But those of you who are more adventurous, they should look at this derivation carefully and see in the end if I've done any mistake to fix Bardeen's signs. Okay? But eventually those signs will not matter. But my claim is that there is a problem there. I've done the calculation twice, and I couldn't figure out any mistake in my calculation. Okay? Okay, so we want to derive his equation 15. And since we have kij 0, the time derivative of the kij, it is clear that what we want to derive is a Lie derivative, right? Lie derivative with respect to the normal, and then write it in terms of Lie derivative with respect to time and the shift vector, and then we should get that equation. And that is also the dynamical equation. So to do that, let us start with the Gauss equation. Okay, so what does the Gauss equation say? This is the Gauss Kodaichi first equation. Okay. So it is P delta alpha, P gamma beta, P lambda mu, P sigma nu, R delta gamma lambda sigma is alpha beta mu nu plus K alpha mu K beta nu minus K alpha mu K beta mu. And now I want to do a contraction of two indices. So what I'll do is I'll raise one of the index. So what I want to do actually is to have, okay, so we have played with this equation earlier, right? We did the contraction of two indices and we got this equation in the previous class, or in the class before that. But now what I want is not a Ricci scalar. I want a Ricci tensor on the hypersurface. Okay? Eventually, I want to get an equation which looks like that, just a Ricci tensor. I just want to do one contraction instead of two contractions, and that is what I am going to do. And that will give us the dynamical equation. Okay. So I'm going to do just one contraction. And so you can raise any index you wish. For example, you can raise nu here. And that will tell you that you also have to raise nu here. And now you just do the contraction of beta and nu. So I put a nu here, and there is no beta here. Oh, there is a beta here. So, sorry, I should have raised nu here earlier. And now I put beta as nu, so I get rho r alpha mu. Okay? Is this clear? Sorry. I'm very sorry. I should do it again. Okay. Just let us do it again. So we have P delta alpha, P gamma beta, P lambda mu, and we can write it as P sigma mu. So this is the Gauss-Kodaty first equation. R delta gamma lambda sigma is R alpha beta mu nu plus K alpha mu K beta nu minus K alpha nu K beta mu. So I want to contract one index. What I do is I want to contract beta and nu. So I raise nu here. So on this side I have raised nu. I raise nu here. I raise nu here. And I raise nu here. Okay. Now I want to contract beta and nu. So I put beta equal to nu. So beta equal to nu. If I put here, it will become a Ricci tensor. So this is just R alpha mu. If I put beta equal to nu, this will just become trace of K. And if I put beta equal to nu, this will just become beta or nu, whatever. Okay. So now, I want to say is that this equation then leads to an equation like P delta alpha, P gamma sigma, P lambda mu, R delta gamma lambda sigma is equal to So what I do here is I take P delta alpha, P lambda mu, and I use for P gamma. So from here to here you can get easily, because P gamma nu acts on P sigma nu and it will give you this. And then for P gamma sigma, I want to use the definition of P gamma sigma in terms of lapse and the metric. So I will have G gamma sigma plus N gamma and sigma times the Ricci, which is delta gamma lambda sigma. And so my claim is that in two steps, very easy steps, you can show that this quantity is P delta alpha, just you have to expand it and contract, okay? P lambda mu, R delta lambda, plus P delta alpha, P gamma mu, N lambda N sigma R delta lambda gamma sigma. You may have to change the indices in the last, to reach the last step. So now I can, so this is the left hand side of, this is the left hand side of this equation. So I get one of my main intermediate equations, which you can show. And that is P delta mu, P lambda nu, R delta lambda plus P delta alpha, P gamma mu, N lambda, N sigma, R delta lambda gamma sigma is R alpha mu plus K alpha mu K minus K alpha nu K nu mu. So one contraction of index of one of the two of the indices of the Gauss-Kodaichi first equation gives us this equation. That is what is my claim. And you can check this by these steps. Okay, so now comes the slightly harder part, which is your homework. We can do it in class, but if you are not able to do it in the if you are not able to do it, we'll do it. Okay, what we want to compute is this expression here. So this is these are two projections along the hypersurface and two projections along the normal, which we have to compute. And my claim is that this is P, that P delta mu, this is your, well, if you want to do it in tutorial, you can do it in tutorial. If you, otherwise, this will go in the homework anyway. So it's P gamma nu and lambda n sigma L R delta gamma or delta lambda gamma sigma. This is equal to the Lie derivative along the normal. This is a normal n mu. Okay, this is not lapse. This small n, Lie derivative along the normal, k mu nu plus k mu lambda k lambda nu plus 1 over n, where n, capital N is the lapse, d mu, d nu n. So now let me give you the hints for how to do this. This is, well, I gave an exercise yesterday which some students were able to do in three lines. So maybe those students can also do this in three lines. So, but let me still give the hints. So we have the, okay. The first thing is that this involves the lapse, it involves a Lie derivative along the normal of k mu nu. So it is already capturing the way the extrinsic curvature is going to change along the normal world lines. Okay? And we know that normal is related to the time flow and the shift vector. So in a way, we are almost there in intuition that we have an equation which is going to capture the rate of change of the extrinsic curvature as the time flows. And this is what is going to give us the dynamics. Okay? This equation combined with this equation. This equation combined with this equation is the answer which we are looking for. So, but let me give you the hints how to do this. So to do this, you have to compute the projections of this, obviously. You have to use the equation which I gave you earlier, that delta alpha delta beta minus delta beta delta alpha on, let us say, n gamma is the way it is related to R and N, okay? Like, I'm suppressing the indices here. So we have seen this equation earlier, right? The definition of R, the full R, this is not Ricci scalar. This is like the full space-time curvature, Riemann tensor. So you have to use this here, okay? And then what you have to use is the expression for, so use this, use k mu nu. The expression of k mu nu in terms of the covariant derivatives and the normals. You have that expression given to you. And the third thing which you have to use is the fact that k mu nu is a spatial vector. Okay, you will need this to prove this. And then you can also use, but there may be a quicker way to do that, you can also use the fact that we have our n mu equals minus n. So this is the same hint which I gave yesterday as some global time function t. And then you can prove that n mu del mu n nu is actually d nu log of n from here. Once you show this, then you will see how this 1 over n is going to come. Okay, so once it may be slightly lengthy, like the way I did it is slightly lengthy. People are very quick in the class. They may do it in five lines, this one. So there may be another way to see this expression. This is just one way of looking at it. Okay? So you will need these hints. You'll essentially what you have to do is put in back the differential geometric version of the space-time curvature, act with one normal and one projection, and then you will see the Lie derivative emerging. Everything will come naturally. Once you will put this, because you know k mu is also related to the Lie derivative of n mu, and also the way it is related to the covariant derivatives, it is just algebra. There is nothing profound in this calculation. And these are the steps which you can take. There may be another way you may find to prove it. Okay? But I'm not going to do this in the class. I want that you should attempt it first. Otherwise, I will do it. Okay? It is slightly lengthy, the way I did. Okay, so this is the answer which we are going to use here in this expression. And I have checked that there is no sign problem or index problem in this equation. So the eventual error which is going to come is at the very last step in the Bardeen's thing. So this is also available in some differential geometry books, this expression. So, and this is correct, that there is no problem here. Okay, so let us put this expression now into this equation. So I'll do the calculation here. So if you put this expression here, then what you get is Lie derivative along the normal, k mu nu. So I'm just putting this here, and I'm rearranging the terms. Plus k mu lambda, k mu lambda, plus 1 over n, d mu, d nu n. This is equal to So what I'm doing is I'm keeping this term on the left hand side, just this term, bringing this term on the right hand side with other terms. And then we will get r mu nu plus k mu nu k minus k mu gamma k gamma nu minus p delta mu p lambda nu r delta lambda. Okay. And then we can write, using the property which we discussed in the second lecture, relating the Lie derivative of with respect to the flow towards the normal, with the Lie derivative of time and the shift, we can write this, because this is just going to give us Lie derivative along time minus the Lie derivative along the shift, this quantity. Okay? So the answer will be from here in a couple of steps, that Lie derivative along time k mu nu minus Lie derivative along the shift, let us call it ni, k mu nu is is minus d mu d nu acting on n plus n times all this term. So all this term here in this bracket. Okay? What I've just done is I've just used the fact that the way n mu is related to the time global time function and the shift vector. And when I do that, I get this. The 1 over n goes away in going from this step to this step, and then this 1 over n is multiplied by this n. Essentially, I'm multiplying everything by n in this equation. So I get n times this. So once I do that, I am almost there. But then I have to use some more results to find out what is this quantity. So let us compute this quantity now, the two projections acting on Ricci. Okay, so we know that, let us start with the Einstein tensor. We have g mu nu equal to r mu nu minus half g mu nu r. And if you take the trace of this tensor, you will get g, which is essentially g mu mu equal to minus r equal to 8 pi g t. If you use the Einstein equation, g mu nu equal to t mu nu. Okay, what I'm doing here is I'm writing the Einstein tensor. I'm taking the trace of the Einstein tensor, or let me do slowly. So I'm writing g mu nu equal to this, equal to 8 pi g t mu nu. Now I'm taking the trace of this equation. Okay, if I take the trace of this equation, I'll get g equal to minus r equal to 8 pi g trace of t mu nu, which is t. And if t mu nu, so our t mu nu is of the form rho plus p u mu u nu plus p g mu nu. So we can easily compute the trace of this. And the, or in the Bardeen's notation, we can compute the trace, and it turns out that the way he defines is t mu nu. Let us define in the way he defines. So he has his T00, he calls his Tij part as Sij, which is his equation 10. Okay? So when I take the trace of t mu nu, I will have a T00 part plus the Tii part. Okay? So the trace T in the Bardeen's notation will be just 8 pi g s minus rho, or s minus e, because he calls rho as e. So where s is the trace of s, trace of Sij. Okay? And this s becomes 3 times the pressure if you look at this tensor. Okay, this capital S is just the trace of Sij of the Bardeen's tensor in equation 10 of his paper. Okay, so this is one result which we need. The second result which we need is to So once I have this, these two, now I can write down what is r mu nu. I can just say r mu nu is 8 pi g t mu nu plus half g mu nu r. And then I will get, all this implies that r mu nu is 8 pi g t mu nu minus half g mu nu s minus rho. This you can just show independently of all this, just using the properties of the Einstein tensor and the Einstein field equations, that g mu nu is 8 pi g t mu nu, and this s is the trace of Tij part. So usually in cosmology, when we write the trace of Tij, it just gives 3 times the pressure. So this is the same rho minus 3p, which is here, or 3p minus rho. Okay, so now where are we? Yeah, so now we want to take the projection of this equation. So if I act two projection tensors, which I need here, so I have computed this in terms of the matter, t mu nu and its trace, and now I want to project it on the hypersurface, this equation. Okay, so if you project it, then the projection gives, this implies, this is very simple, that p mu alpha p beta nu r alpha beta is is 8 pi g So there is an r alpha beta, so we want to project this, so we'll have p alpha beta mu nu here, r alpha beta, and then we will have this p alpha mu p beta nu acting on t mu nu or t alpha beta, so we'll have a t alpha beta here. So I'm just projecting this equation. I want to compute the left hand side because I need that here to compute this equation finally. So I'm projecting the tensor T mu nu first, and then I want to do the projection on the second one, which is just the projection over the G mu nu, which is just going to give me gamma mu nu. So this is just a 3 metric, which I will have 3 times, or the 3 metric G mu, gamma mu nu, or the 3 metric on the hypersurface, S minus rho. This is what I have. And this quantity, we have learned in the first lecture, that this is just S mu nu. In the Bardeen's notation, this is just Sij. This is just the spatial, this is just the stress tensor. Okay? We have projected the stress energy tensor on the hypersurface, we just get the stress tensor. So, finally, so we have this equation now in the box. We use this equation here, okay, and then we will get this equation. So let me write down the final equation which we get. So the final equation is this minus this equal to minus d mu d nu n plus n times, let us take the geometric part, the geometry part first, which is 3 r mu nu plus k mu nu capital K minus k mu gamma k gamma nu, and then this part. So this is already with a minus sign, okay, this is with a minus sign. So we have to take care of the minus sign here. So if you do that, you will get 4 pi. You get a 4 pi because, this is not right. This is gamma mu nu by 2, S minus rho, because there was a half here. I forgot a factor of half. So from here to here, there is a factor of 2 here. So you divide this by 2. You got a 4 pi g, and there will be gamma mu nu, which is a 3 metric, S minus rho, minus 2 times S mu nu. So this is the final equation which we need. This is written in the form which is not same as the Bardeen right now, because we have the both indices down. We'll have to pull one index up, and that will change some terms inside. But let us see what we have done. We started with the Gauss constraint. We contracted one index. Okay? Once we do that, we get this equation here. And then we have to compute this quantity. And this is equal to this Lie derivative of k mu nu plus these terms. Here we are, once we plug this back in this equation here, we have all these terms, but still a projection to be computed for the Ricci tensor, the four-dimensional Ricci tensor on the hypersurface. And this exercise was to compute what is the four-dimensional Ricci tensor in terms of the matter, or stress energy tensor and its components and so on. Once we computed that, we computed eventually the projection of the Ricci tensor on the hypersurface,
which gives us this expression, and then we just plug this expression back to get our 6 dynamical equations. Okay? These are 6 because k-mu is a spatial tensor, and it has 3, and it has 6 independent components, all of this. So these 6 dynamical equations and the 4 constraints which we have here, these are the 10 equations, 10 Einstein equations, which we generally get from g mu nu equal to t mu nu by solving it. Okay? And if you specify the initial data using gamma mu nu or k mu nu, then you start with the 12 independent degrees of freedom initially, and with these 10 equations, only 2 degrees of freedom are left. So the gravitational field eventually has 2 degrees of freedom. Okay, so are there any questions here? Then we'll go to the next step and see where Bardeen may have a problem. Yes?
In your last final dynamical equations that are boxed, is the n on the right side supposed to be multiplying the 4 pi g as well?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You're right. Thank you very much. This is very important. Otherwise, we'll not get the right perturbation equation in the end. Okay. So this equation is correct. Okay.
I don't understand where the term k mu lambda, and like the second line of the.
This is this term.
No, but you have one on both sides of the equation.
Oh, just wait. There must be a factor of 2. Thanks a lot. There is a factor of 2 here. Okay. This is crucial. Very good. So there is a factor of 2, and there is an n so far here. Okay, so now let us go a step forward, because what Bardeen has, he has with the mixed indices, and whereas we have both with the lower indices. So we have to raise one index, and that is not as trivial as we have done earlier. The reason is because there is a Lie derivative acting on the lower indices. So if we want to bring one index up, we have to multiply, we have to contract with the spatial metric, and the Lie derivative also acts on that. Okay, so that gives some extra terms. So instead of raising the indices here, I will raise the indices here itself, because it is easier to see. But you guys can do there also. So what I'm going to use is the fact that so we have to raise one index, and we are going to use the fact that this is true, gamma mu alpha, Lie derivative. So n mu is the normal, right? So we have to remember that. So Lie derivative of n times small n acting on k alpha mu is the Lie derivative of n times small n k mu nu. We are going to derive this. This is, I'm just stating you what is the result which we need. 2n k mu alpha k alpha nu. This is true. So this is very easy to derive, because I can take the Lie derivative of n times small n, act on k mu nu, and then this is computed as Lie derivative of n times small n of gamma mu alpha k alpha nu. Okay? K mu nu is gamma mu alpha k alpha nu. I just write it like this. And now I will have 2 terms. So I'll have Lie derivative n acting on gamma mu alpha times k alpha nu, and then I'll have second term, which is gamma mu alpha Lie derivative k alpha nu. Okay. And we know this, what it is, from the definition of the k mu nu or k mu alpha. Okay, we know that k mu nu, the way it is related to the Lie derivative of n. So this is, the first term is just minus 2n k mu alpha. This is just from the definition of k mu alpha, k alpha nu plus gamma mu alpha, Lie derivative n, k alpha nu. So now we need just two more properties. So everything, this is fine for us. This we know, this doesn't change at all. We can just raise the indices freely. This doesn't cause us any problem because we can just raise one index freely. This is the only issue because there is a Lie derivative acting on k mu nu. And if I want to compute Lie derivative of the mixed indexes in the k mu nu, then I have to be slightly careful because there is an extra term which I have to subtract. So now we are going to use two properties which we know very well. The first property is that we will have this Lie derivative t, which we have already used here, minus Lie derivative along ni, by the way the global time function is defined, of nn. And if you do that, you will just get, if you plug it back, now this equation here, if you eliminate L and K mu nu, okay, by using the fact that L and K mu nu, the way it is related to L and K mu nu with this factor of n, then what you will get is, what you will get is L of t of k mu nu minus L of ni of k mu nu, okay, is equal to minus d nu n plus n of r mu nu plus capital K mu nu. And this 2 n k mu alpha k alpha nu will cancel with this term here. So eventually there will be no mixed term like this. That will cancel with that term. So you will get this. And then minus of, I'm just pulling everything inside now. With this n, minus 8 pi g s mu nu plus 4 pi g delta ij. So there was no delta ij. Yeah, so when I raise the gamma index in the gamma mu nu, this will be just delta mu nu plus 4 pi g delta mu nu s minus rho. This is the equation which you will get once you raise the index. Okay, so now let us look at Bardeen's equation, equation 15. So if everyone has the paper, let us look at it carefully. Okay, so we have the first term as Lie derivative along the time with a k mu nu, which gives us kij zero term, because that is just the time derivative of k mu nu. Now let us go to the right hand side. We have minus d mu d nu n, which is same as, do you have?
No.
Okay, why don't you see this? So then we have minus di dj n, and the same as minus d mu d nu n here. And then you can see all other terms agree on the right hand side. We get the right signs. What doesn't agree are the terms which will come from here, if we expand the Lie derivative of k mu nu, okay? But this is canonical, right? Like, this is well known, what is this Lie derivative? So let us write it. So when Lie derivative acts on a mixed tensor, So when lead derivative, so from the properties of the lead derivatives, this is textbook material. If it acts on any mixed tensor K mu nu, then we will get N of, let us say, alpha, K mu nu alpha. So like when the lead derivative acts on the tensor which has both indices down, all terms are of the plus, with, come with a plus sign. But when the lead derivative acts on the term, on the terms which are mixed, then it is of this form. So minus n mu alpha. These are all now partial derivatives. We are just taking a lead derivative of a mixed tensor. Plus n alpha nu k mu alpha. Okay? This is fact of mathematical physics. So this is true. So we can now just put all these terms here. So because we have a minus sign, what we will get is just minus n alpha k mu nu alpha plus n mu alpha k alpha nu plus n alpha nu k mu alpha. Which doesn't agree with what Bardeen has. Bardeen has these three terms. Sorry, the minus sign. Bardeen has these three terms with a plus sign or with the opposite signs, which means this term should have come with a plus sign, but I really don't see it happening because of the definition of the way normal is related to the global time function and the shift vector. Okay? So I think this is a typo in his paper, but now I will tell you like why it doesn't affect us in the paper. It is certainly a issue if we are not able to fix it. So if some people are adventurous, they should try to fix. Like maybe there is an error which I made in the calculation, and maybe it really comes with a plus sign somehow. Okay? Either the definition of lead derivative which he uses is different, or maybe has some different convention, or there is a plus sign here. But since this equation is true, this has been derived in some differential geometry books, we are just raising the index, so it is no doubt that this comes with a minus sign, so this has to come with a minus sign, so these signs have to be correct. Okay. So now let me tell you like why it will not affect us. We are going to do this again, but this could have affected us if these terms would not have died. So these terms actually don't matter, all these three terms, to the linear order in perturbations. Okay, so let me just tell you quickly why it will be so. So what we are going to consider, so the question is about these three terms. So what we are going to consider is a Robertson-Vaucan metric, which will not have any shift vector in the background. Okay, the shift vector will arise, but will arise as a perturbation. So shift vector by itself will be a first order perturbation. Because there is, yeah.
There was a mistake, I believe there was a mistake when you calculated t.
Okay.
You said t is supposed to be 1, 0, 0, 0. But by its definition, which is n, small n, plus capital N, it has to be n to n, which is the shift. So if you expand the lead derivative of t on k.
I see. And then it will be a plus sign? Okay. Let us discuss this after the class. But anyway, like let me tell you like why these terms do not matter. So the reason is that n alpha is the first order in perturbation. So what Bardeen actually has is nk is minus dk beta, which is in his notes. This is just take it right at the moment that this is what will turn out to be the shift vector when we will perturb the cosmological metric. And then if this is, since we are working in the first order of perturbations, if we'll find the perturbations from this equation, since n by itself is first order, we cannot contract with the perturbed k. We'll be only contracting with the background k. If we contract with the perturbed k, we'll be going to the nonlinear order. We'll go to the second order in perturbations. So if you will contract with the background k, then the background k, this is actually like one of your homeworks which you will do, is just h or minus h of the, here minus h, delta alpha mu. So my claim is that these two terms will anyway cancel, like if you will compute them at the first order. Then the question is of this equation, and this equation, again, this will have in the first order, and this will have in the background, which will have just h and a Kronecker delta, and its partial derivative on the hypersurface is 0, because h is a Hubble parameter which only depends on time, and nothing acts on Kronecker delta. Okay, so even if these terms come with a opposite sign, then what we have, it will not matter to us eventually. But let us see, like after the class we can discuss how this sign is fixed. Maybe like this is a plus sign when we go to, that is still minus?
That is minus, except when you write down the derivative of t,
yeah,
this LT, k mu, instead of being k mu nu 0, it gives you k mu nu 0 plus twice the right hand, the other term.
Oh, I see. So it becomes plus. You are saying that this will be just k mu nu 0 plus of?
Plus 2.
Plus the derivative of ni k mu nu. Good, very good. So that is very good to hear. Okay, so let us go. So I think like what we have done so far is to derive all the equations we needed in GR, except the, okay, we haven't derived. We have derived all the geometrical equations in the, which is still equation 15. What we have not derived is equation 11 and equation 12. So these equations will come from T minimum mu equal to 0. And these will give us essentially the way the Lie derivative acts on rho and the way it acts on the J. D derivative x on J, yeah. The calculation for these goes in a very similar way. It is actually not as lengthy as to derive all these equations. But to do this, we have to do, we'll have to introduce the relativistic hydrodynamics, and then to do general relativistic hydrodynamics to get these equations. So if we find time, maybe next week or later in the course, then I'll do this derivation. But right now, we can just assume that equation 11 and 12 in Bardeen's paper are correct. Okay? Or do you guys want that we should do it right now? Like, it'll take one lecture. We can do it tomorrow or something. But my feeling is that let us assume that, and let us go towards perturbations. If we find time, because perturbation itself is very extensive, if we find time, we'll do it in the end. Okay? Okay, so let us go now to, yeah, this is like the super short summary of the FRW cosmology. Okay, so all of you took cosmology course, right? The one in the fall. Or was there anyone who has not taken the cosmology course? You haven't taken? Okay. We'll go very. I think like we have derived all the equations what we need. We just have to plug in the metric, the FRW metric now, in all the equations, and we'll get all the equations. But I'm not going to do it. This is your homework problem. It is very easy. It should not take more than an hour. So we want to study. So we have all the equations which we needed, all dynamical equations, the 6 dynamical equations and 4 constraints from the Einstein's equations. And we want to go to a very special case. And the very special case is that we want to have, maybe let me write down the last equation anyway in this with these constraints so that we know what it is. So this is the dynamical equations. And this is ki j0 plus nk ki jk minus ni kkj I can erase this part completely. So we will not need much concepts from the Friedman dynamics, maybe till the last very few lectures. So even if one has forgotten some elements of the course, one should not worry about it. We have to compute perturbation equations, which is essentially a straightforward problem. So we want what we are going to study is the Robertson-Walker. And this is obtained by requiring that our space, we have a spatial homogeneity and spatial isotropy. So spatial homogeneity means that if you take a hypersurface, then the any nearby points or any 2 points, they look very similar to each other. And isotropy means that there is no preferred direction on the hypersurface. Okay, so if you have an isotropic spacetime, then there is a preferred direction. If you have isotropic spacetime, there is no preferred direction on the spatial hypersurface. If the spatial hypersurface is homogeneous, then any 2 points, they look alike. And this is a very restrictive symmetry which we require. It actually comes under the name in mathematics, it is called maximally symmetric spaces, what we have here as a spatially homogeneous and isotropic. And it gives us 3 possible geometry of this, 3 possible spatial geometry. So we can have spatial curvature as positive, which we call, let us call it C, because Bardeen also calls it C, and most of the time it is called K, small k. In our previous course, we had called it small k, but there are so many k's already, so it is good to call it C now, anyway. So this has C greater than 0. Then we have spatial curvature 0. And then we can have spatial curvature negative, which is an open universe.
So this is like a sphere, this is like a flat space, and this is like a hyperboloidal space. And then we can have, we have the metric, which is our, so the isotropy also means, if you impose isotropy, it means that if you have a hypersurface on which you are doing all these geometrical things, then there is a congruence of time-like world lines. And if you take a tangent to these time-like world lines, and you call it u mu, so there are these observers, co-moving observers going along these, then isotropy means that you, if you take the, if you take a vector which is orthogonal to this tangent vector, then there is, and if you take these for all these geodesics, you cannot construct a preferred vector on the hypersurface. Because if you would have been able to construct a preferred vector on the hypersurface, which is orthogonal to these tangent vectors, then it will destroy isotropy, because you will have a preferred direction on your hypersurface. Okay? So the isotropy means that if you consider these time-like world lines, if you consider the tangent to them, if you take their orthogonal, and there is no preferred orthogonal vector, right? This is what isotropy means. And we can now, and these are, these u mu's are like n mu's, which we had, or proportional to them, up to some constant, depending on what is our lapse. So we can write g mu nu, the full space-time metric, as minus u mu u nu plus gamma mu nu. This is our, using our definition of the spatial metric and the space-time metric. And then we can compute the line element, g mu nu dx mu dx nu, in the full space-time. And we will, this you can show in two steps that this is just minus dt square plus some scale factor a square t plus the metric on the hypersurface at constant time, which is a function of x, I, this dx I, dx j, where the time, as before, is defined as, or time is related to u mu as this. So here we are taking the lapse to be 1 at the moment. We'll put it back. But these time-like world lines are orthogonal to the hypersurface. This is also required by isotropy. Okay. So this is our metric for this space-time, where gamma ij, so I'm going to now make a small change in my convention. Whenever I write gamma ij, it will be the gamma ij without the scale factor. So essentially the metric on the hypersurface should have A, because it, the A is multiplying this metric, right? So what Bardeen calls hij is A square gamma ij. He calls something as fij, which I will call as gamma ij. So look at his equation just before equation 17. So what he calls fij, we will call gamma ij, because that is what is also generally called gamma ij. Okay, but gamma ij is not a function of time. The dependence, what we have done is that we had the spatial metric. The dependence in time has gone into the scale factor. And this is just the dependence in the spatial coordinates. So now, what is also used in cosmology many times, which you must have seen just recently in your course, the course we just finished, is that metric can also be written in conformal time, eta, as this, minus dta square plus gamma ij dxi dxj, where eta, by definition, satisfies dt equals a eta d eta. Okay. So now, I told you that there are these three possible spatial curvatures. You can have closed spatial curvature, which will be like a sphere. You can have zero spatial curvature. And you can have negative spatial curvature.
So if you look at these geometries, then this part of the line element, gamma ij dxi dxj, it can be written as, in the spherical coordinates, if you write these in the spherical coordinates, as some, what is this? Some fc square r d omega square, where d omega square is d theta square plus sine square theta d phi square. Okay? This is from the geometrical properties. We are not deriving this. You just have to assume this result is true. From the geometrical properties of these three spheres and these surfaces, which you can construct from for these spatial curvatures, you can show that gamma ij dxi dxj has this particular form, where fc is a function, where r is the radial coordinate. So fc is a function of this radial coordinate r, which has this form. So it is c to the power minus half sine of c to the power half r, if c is positive. It is r if c is 0, and it is minus c to the power minus half and sine hyperbolic of c to the power half r minus c, sorry. So sine hyperbolic minus c to the power half r when c is less than 0. This you must have seen in many books. Like, people write FRW metric, the Robertson-Walker metric, in this particular form, where there are these sines and sine hyperbolics. Okay? Now you can do one more thing. Like, this is a very familiar form, which you can write. You can say that this surface of the surface S of a co-moving sphere, which we have here, it is related to the radius r. So this S is the surface of this co-moving sphere on the which we have taken in the for the spatial geometry. It satisfies this equation, 4 pi fk fc square r. Okay, and then it is tempting to define this itself as a radial coordinate. Let us call it capital R. This is not Ricci scalar. This is another radial coordinate, capital R. And if you do this, then you can easily show with these transformations that ds square is minus dt square plus a square t dr square by 1 minus cr square plus r square d omega square. This is a metric which we used when we did our course earlier. I'm calling it capital R because I already used small r. Here you can call this capital R and this as small r. Okay? But the change in the convention which we are making is that everyone in cosmology calls this CK. We are calling it C because we have already used K, capital K, for trace of the extrinsic curvature. We can call it small k, but there is a small k for the wave number. So we are running out of the alphabet, so let us call it C, which Bardeen calls. Okay? So now the homework is the following. I'm not going to do this in the class, those equations. We have done that. Most of you have done that in the course before. So it should be very easy. Okay, so just before I go to the homework part. So if the lapse is not 1, then we can write the lapse as, well, Bardeen calls his lapse as minus n naught. Bardeen calls his lapse as n naught, so we can write it as n naught plus a square gamma ij dxi dxj. If lapse is equal to 1,
we get that equation, which is here. If lapse is equal to 1, then t is proper time. If lapse is equal to a, then t is conformal time. Then we are working with a conformal time, essentially. We have a conformal time here. Okay. We are going to use the notion of conformal time in the last week, because most of the people who work in perturbations, they work with the conformal time. We will derive all perturbation equations, those master equations, without using the notion of conformal time. We will not put n not equal to 1. We will do in full generality. And then when we come to some of the applications, we'll go back to the conformal time. I will tell you the dictionary, how we go. Okay? It is not easy to just make a shift. We'll have to switch to the right equations carefully, because again, like, we have to take care of this factor of A being absorbed somewhere and somewhere not. Okay, but we'll do it in the end. So now the homework is that consider So what Bardeen calls rho is E. So he considers a background stress tensor. Background. So the homework is you have to derive all the equations in the background, simply to state that, because we are going to derive then perturbations next week. So background stress energy tensor. And you will see that instead of working with G naught naught and so on, now equations will be obvious to you. Like, if you just use the energy density constraint, if you put the background values, you'll just get Friedman equation. Okay? Similarly, if you use the momentum constraint, you will be led to the H dot equation. You don't have to use G naught naught, GII, and so on. These constraints which you have calculated, the dynamical equations which you have calculated, are enough to give you all the equations. Okay? So what we have to compute, okay, so the background stress energy tensor is, what he has is E as, he calls E as E naught. This is a function of time. The momentum density is zero in the background, which is also true, which is what we have as the FRW. And this he calls as the pressure. So this is like the pressure. This is very similar to, we have seen it many times, that when we write the T mu nu for a perfect fluid, it is rho minus rho PPP. All of the terms are zero. So this is essentially the same. So this is E naught, and this is P naught, P naught, P naught. He calls the background pressure as P naught. Okay? So what we have to show is some of the properties. So this is the homework for this week. We have to plug the metric which Bardeen has, or this metric, in the constraints. But before that, we have to compute something. We have to compute that Rij. This you'll have to compute using Christoffel's. This is the only thing you'll have to compute using Christoffel's. But this is trivial. Like, I think maybe you guys have already done this in the cosmology course earlier, computed the Christoffel's of the Robertson-Walker metric. Did you guys do? Okay. So once you have that, just contract them. Just take the derivatives, contract, you'll get Rij equal to this. The second thing which you have to show is what Bardeen defines as the Hubble parameter. The way he does is, this is A dot by N naught A. So if N naught is 1, it is the usual A dot by A. But now N naught is not 1, so it is A dot by N naught A. And this is equal to the minus the trace of the extrinsic curvature, K. K by 3, sorry. From the energy density constraint, all these are, I think, 10-minute each exercises. From energy density constraint, which we have derived, you can easily show the Friedman equation is true, that H square is 8 pi g by 3 E naught minus C by a square. If you find it easier, which I think is certainly easier, put C equal to 0. Okay? Then you will have just a flat metric. Christoffel symbols will become very easy. Derivatives will become very easy if you don't want to keep track of C. So first do with C equal to 0, then put C equal to non-zero. Sorry. Where?
8 pi g by 3.
Oh, okay. That's a 3. Okay, and from the trace of the Kij0 equation, so you have the Kij0 equation which we derived. We can assume that, well, anyway, the lapse is, or the shift is 0, so those three terms again don't matter to us, even if, but I think like he's right, so the signs are right in Bardeen's paper. So, but those things again disappear. So we have, from the Kij0 equation, we can take the trace of this equation, okay? And then you can show that h dot by n0 plus h square is minus 4 pi g3 e plus 3 p0. This is the h dot equation which we derived last year. Using these two equations, we can get the conservation law, which is E dot 0 plus 3H E naught plus P naught equal to 0. Or you can derive this independently from the T-mu equation. Okay? So use this equation with this, and you'll get this. This also we did earlier. So this is all. This gives us all the equations of the background, which we may have to use. We will certainly use this tomorrow. But this is, I think like this is very straightforward to do. You are given Robertson-Walker metric, and you have to find what is the Ricci tensor. You have to find what is the extrinsic curvature. And just plug that those quantities. Once you get the Ricci tensor, you will get the Ricci scalar. Plug the Ricci scalar and the extrinsic curvature in this equation, and you will immediately see Friedmann equation. Yeah.
Which form of the Robertson-Walker metric should we use to start with? Is it the
use any form, which is most easiest to you work with. Use any form. Use even flat metric. Maybe use flat metric. Like I don't want some people. I don't want to make you more tired. I want to make as easy as possible. But again, like if you want, we can do this in the class, but it will again take one lecture. So if you want, we will do it. No? Because this you have already derived using G mu equal to T mu long ago. I see. Good. So then this should be doable with left hand. Okay, but this you must derive, Rij and the extrinsic curvature part. Okay, so now we are, I think, I'm sorry, like I took so long. So now we are done with all the